This week's interview is with Nick Van Dyke of the band Redemption. And Nick, my first question for you is, what is Redemption doing right now? What do you guys have going on? And what is the band up to right now?
Well, we are in pre-production right now on our fifth CD, which is tentatively called This Mortal Coil. I'm actually staring right now at a Pro Tools screen of the first song, comparing notes with our producer, this guy Neil Kernan, who's fairly legendary, but he's done everything from old progressive rock stuff like Yes to Queensryche to Dokken to Flotsam and Jetsam to modern death metal like Nile and a lot of the technical death stuff. So he's got a pretty broad palette of experience drawn, and we're very excited to be digging in with him. So working hard on this new batch of songs, and hopefully we're going to go into the studio in about another 3 or 4 weeks to start tracking.
Speaking of Neil Kernan, is this the first time you've worked with him? And why have you decided to work with Neil on your next release?
It is the first time we've worked with him. I've known him more, socially, I guess, for a number of years, and we've kicked around the notion of working together. But it was when we were writing the last record, and I'd already determined who was going to be producing it, where he called me out of the blue and said that his taste, which are sort of cyclical, we're moving back into the sort of prog thing, and he was getting a creative itch to do something, and he actually said, would you like to create a Rage for Order for the new century? And that's a pretty compelling invitation. So I told him that we were already, we're already committed on the that record, which turned out to be Snowfall, but that when the time came to do a new record, we should talk. And so time came to do a new record, and we started talking, and I thought, this would be an interesting way to sort of change things up and get somebody involved in the songwriting process with us and really produce, as opposed to just sort of mixing and engineering, which is, to a large degree, what we've done in the past. So, it is the first time we've done this process and the first time we've worked with him, so it'll be pretty exciting.
Now, for Snowfall and Judgment Day, for when that album came out, you did a tour with Dream Theater, and do you guys plan on maybe touring again and opening for another big band like that when this new album comes out?
I don't think it'll be quite that. That was a fairly extravagant thing for us. We actually spent about 7 weeks going across the country. It's hard, being the size that we are. We're not going to be playing big arenas like we were with the Dream Theater tour, and it's difficult to make the economics work. But having said that, we're going to spend around 10 days in Europe in the fall, and we'll be doing, I'm sure, some shows in the States before and after that. I'm not sure we'll make it all the way across the country, but we'll definitely be doing some live stuff.
Nick, in the past, when I've seen Dream Theater, you have the fans that go to the show, but they really don't want to see the opening band. In fact, many times they either boo the band off stage, and there are very few times where this doesn't happen. And I'm curious, how were you received on this tour opening for Dream Theater?
The tour went very well. There was a bit of, the first 10 rows were people that bought these platinum passes to see Dream Theater and paid an awful lot of money. So, the attitude is to walk out and their arms are folded and it's like, get this over with and to impress us. So we, generally speaking, we were able to get most of them to warm up to us, and I think, we certainly didn't feel any antagonism from their fans. They're a tough bunch. But I think I think most people tended to like us, and I think we definitely got exposed to an audience, which of course is sort of the purpose of touring. As far as those guys, performing, opening up for them and just hanging out with them, they're terrific guys. I have nothing but great things to say about them. And of course, James wound up, I consider him a friend, he wound up singing on our last record as a guest performer, and I stay in touch with him and with Mike, so it's all good. They're terrific guys, and we hope to have the opportunity to play with them again one day.
Now, my question for you is this, Nick. Ray Alder, of course, is known for his work in Fate's Warning. And for me, listening to these Redemption albums, it seemed to come together musically. I mean, the chemistry and everything seemed to come together for you guys musically when Ray joined the band. And talk a little bit about how he got into the band and how everything just basically came together for Redemption. Because I'll tell you what, I think Ray sounds great on these albums. So how did it come together?
It's funny. I became friends with him prior to the first album coming out. I just met, I'd obviously been a fan of Fate's Warning for many years, and I just bumped into him at a club show in the Sunset Strip down here, and we wound up becoming friends, and I had written a bunch of music that I never thought I'd something was going to amount to with it, and I wound up playing some of the riffs for him, and he wound up using one of the riffs on the first Engine record. And he then sort of offered to help put together, you know, what our first album was, I guess, to sort of help produce it and help find musicians to perform on it, and wound up being a demo, really, more than anything else. And we were asked to play at the Prog Power Festival, you know, way back when, and we had a very talented guest vocalist, a guy named Corey Brown, perform with us, and then I started writing music for the next album, which would become The Fullness of Time. And Ray sort of said, had heard the pre-production stuff, and said, hey, I kind of like to sing on this, and I wasn't going to say no, so that was pretty much that. We talked a little bit about how, you know, it had to be a real thing for him. I didn't want him to just come in and do this, you know, he needed to actually be a member of the band, and I have tremendous respect, of course, for Faith, and I wanted to make sure that he would be able to do this and still fulfill his obligation to Faith. And so once we had that conversation, it was pretty easy.
Now, I've been to a lot of the European festivals. In fact, I think I've been to pretty much all of them at some point, and many people don't realize that we have our own similar type of festival here, and that's Prog Power. And the reason I bring this up is for anybody that doesn't know what Prog Power is all about, Nick, and for anybody that has not experienced going to Prog Power, and unfortunately, I've only gone once. I went there when Gamma Ray and Angra played, and a bunch of crazy stuff happened there. But talk about Prog Power. Talk about what that's like, not only from the musician perspective of playing Prog Power, but even as a fan, and talk about what the whole Prog Power experience is like, say, for people who have never experienced it before.
Yeah, it's really an interesting phenomenon. I mean, it really grew out of this online community that we were all sort of a part of, and so, you know, when this thing sort of first got put together, you know, the promoter has been a friend of mine since before the festival, and we all sort of just gravitated to each other randomly through our love for this kind of music, so it almost had a feel for those of us that sort of, you know, knew the people behind the story at the outset. So something like going to a high school reunion, except you actually like the people. And so it's that kind of feel to it. But, you know, it's certainly grown into something bigger and, as you say, pretty much is a definitive festival of its type in the States, certainly. So as a music fan, it's a pretty rare opportunity to see, you know, 10 or 12 bands that don't get to the States very often, or that don't get a chance to play in a big venue with great sound and you know, really sort of represent the best of you know, the genre, if you will. And it's, you know, it's a very cool environment. The musicians all hang out. Everybody, it's sort of like, I get the feel the same thing for all these metal cruises that are now happening. You're sort of like stuck in one place, and everybody has to be social. It has that, mm-hmm. that sort of vibe to it as well. And then as a performer, it's fantastic because, you know, you get a chance to play for 1,000 people that are really, really into your music, which you don't get to do very often in the U.S. We played there twice, once as an opening band, and then last time we played sort of in the middle of the lineup. And, you know, it was extremely gratifying to get the response we did, and, of course, that's what we put out on our DVD for those folks that are able to find that. It was a pretty good performance.
Now, one of the things I've noticed about the Prog Power people, and many of the people that go to this, is that most of these people are very tight-knit. Almost everybody knows each other, and you seem to have a very tight-knit community that goes to this event. And I have so many friends of mine that go, and of course, you have the Perpetual Motion of PMX boards, and you just have a lot of tight-knit groups of people that go to this. And in the past, I've gone to some of the European festivals, and even some of them, you have the diehards, but it just, you don't get that same tight-knit community vibe from some of the other festivals that I've experienced, as opposed to Prog Power. And Nick, what's your opinion on that? Why do you think that this tight-knit community exists the way that it does?
It's hard to say. I mean, the core of it, again, is this group of, I don't know, maybe 25 people that have gone from the very first one, all of whom were sort of friends. And I think before I even became part of that community, there was a festival, I think, called Power Mad in Maryland, which was, I gather, sort of a comedy of errors. You know, I don't mean to speak over the promoter, but I gather it didn't exactly go off without a hitch. But these people were going to that festival, and that's sort of how they all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I, you know, that's, for me, anyhow, that's what I see when I see the close fitness, because these are friends of mine that I see once a year, you know, at the show. So I think that's part of it, and I think, you know, the fact that Glenn is able to consistently –
It seems every year Prog Power always has a band that drops out or a few bands that drop out due to some technicality, and it always seems they blame the promoter, and they try to blame the person putting on the festival. And, you know, these festivals, as many people don't realize, they're very difficult to put together. Even if you're in Europe, they're very this is not an easy event to put together. It really is not. And to get some of these bands who usually never even play the U.S. to begin with, and to put all of this together, it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of effort, and there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, for people that may not know this, and you being in the band and in the music business a little bit, Nick, you know, talk about how difficult is it to really put something on like this that, you know, put it in perspective for people that maybe don't know.
I don't have the foggiest notion. I only know that, you know, I'm friends with Glenn, and we talk a little bit about it, so yeah. I have some insight into this stuff, but, you know, it's an immensely complicated thing, and he's, you know, got 10 or 12 or however many years of experience now doing it, so he gets better at it every year, and he anticipates more and more all the myriad things that could go wrong, and he usually cuts them all off at the pass. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that has to go right, but, you know, both, you know, getting people over here and then all the technical requirements, of course, and the mere fact that they're able to change bands in and out the way they do is pretty awe-inspiring, actually. So my hat's off to the guy. I mean, this is something he started out as a labor of love and a hobby without any particular experience in, and he's now incredibly good at it. So
now, as far as your upcoming album is concerned, Nick, you know, talk about the direction of the songwriting. How has it differed? Is it the same? You know, how is it compared to, say, your last couple of releases that you've put out?
It is a lyrically speaking, it's a concept album of sorts. All the songs are, you know, I've had a pretty interesting medical journey the last couple of years, and so, as one might expect, that's sort of left its mark on me and was provided good material for you know, songwriting. So it's a concept album about the notion of mortality and facing mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So that thematically it's a little different than the last couple of records. You know, I would say that our core elements, which are a very heavy riffing contrasted with unabashedly melodic and hooky songwriting, hopefully, is still there. The combination of heaviness and melody, the combination of his technicality to it, but again, it's a sort of song to just make it a wank fest. It's hard to say beyond that. I mean, the songs are still taking shape. I'd say there are some songs, there are a couple of longer songs, like one is about 9.5 and one's about 10.5 minutes. The rest of them are reasonably, and then a couple of 6-minute songs, and a couple of them are reasonably compact as well. Nobody's going to listen to it and be surprised if it's a Redemption album, but I think we're just hopefully getting better and better at our songwriting. And it remains to be seen a little bit how things are going to be shaped by Neil's involvement, but I think they're pretty good songs, so we'll see.
Now, you just talked about, and this kind of leads into my next question, Nick. You just talked about how there are bands out there that have long songs full of wankery, and the one thing I could say about your band that really has impressed me, and the reason I'll go out and these even tell people, hey, this is probably one of, if not the best progressive metal band coming out of the U.S., is that you guys can take, say, like an 8 or 9 minute song, and you can make it sound, and the songs are so good that it seems like the song lasts 4 minutes, but really you got like a 9, 10, 8, 9, 10 minute song. You know what I'm saying?
I do, and that's a very high compliment, and I appreciate that. I like to think that we are successful with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I go back and I listen to something like Sapphire, and it doesn't feel like it's 16 minutes long. It feels like it's as long as a song needs to be and not a second longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm very gratified to hear you say that. I mean, there's the last track on this one, as I said, is coming around 10.5 minutes, and it really doesn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we're able to continue doing that.
And that's the biggest reason why I like you guys, is that, you know, many progressive bands nowadays, you'll listen to some of them and you just, it's almost like they write the songs. Many bands will write songs for the sake of writing long songs. And there are quite a few bands, not even just prog bands, but just metal bands in general that do this. And, you know, they just kind of write these long, super long and, you know, like meandering songs that, you know, they just kind of never end.
There's also a tendency to write as much music as you can to fill the CD, and I think 70 minutes is a lot to demand. I'm guilty of that, by the way. I think one of the was pushing that. It's a lot to demand of the listener. I had sort of intended to have like a, you know, 52-minute album this time, but it's crept up. So, in fact, I expected Neil to try and pare things down, but the notes he sent on the first song are 35 seconds to it, so we'll see. It won't be 70 minutes, but it'll probably be 65.
Now, you have obviously written quite a few songs, and you have four albums out now, and my question for you is, which songs have the most meaning to you? And, you know, I know, speaking as a musician myself, I know that every one of your songs in some way has a real special meaning to you, especially if you're the songwriter or whatnot. But, you know, if you had to pick some of your favorite songs that you've written, what are some of the songs with the most meaning to you, Nick?
Yeah, you know, I think there's an ability for, you know, the songs to have, you know, both a lyrical and a musical, you know, resonance, I suppose. You know, I mentioned Sapphire. That's a pretty intense song for both those reasons. If I think about the song Memory off of Origins of Ruin stands out like that, as does the song Fall on You.
Mm-hmm.
And off Snowfall, I think Black and White World is, you know, other than Sapphire, Black and White World is probably the best song I'll ever be capable of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that one a lot, and I like Love Kills Us All, mm-hmm. The last track. So those, and Waltz is a good song too. It's in a different style. You know, that's more compact and accessible, I guess, than one of the sort of sprawling epics. But I'm pretty pleased with the way all those songs came out.
Okay, Nick. Well, the one album that really affected me quite a bit, and I remember when Klaus had sent me the promo copy of Snowfall and Judgment Day, which really was the album that get me into Redemption. But when I had listened to that album, I went back and started listening to the other three records you put out, and the one album, Nick, that you put out, and you know how every band has that one album that really grabs you, that really gets you into them, and it's almost like even though the other albums that come after it are really good, it's kind of like there's nothing as special as first listening to a certain record. Like for me, Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast would fall into that category. You know, for myself as a Maiden fan, even though the albums that came after it, many of them were very good. But the album that really grabbed me, Nick, was The Origins of Ruin. I think that this record, when I first actually was able to listen to it, and when I first bought it, I was just completely hooked. I mean, I listened to this thing in a car. I listened to it while gaming, while playing, you know, the MMO that I play, and it really moved me. And even Ray Alder's vocals, when I was recording, you know, the new Archetype album, was kind of like his vocals kind of rubbed off on me a bit, because there was something really special about that record. And I guess my question for you, Nick, is that maybe talk a bit about what that album's about, talk about the songs on that, and just talk about that record in general.
Thank you very much. You know, the phrase, interestingly enough, I came across in a book that was written by a guy I went to high school with, who I guess has become something of an amateur author, or a semi-professional author, I should say. And I'd heard about this through the grapevine, so I got a copy of this book that he wrote, basically about his desire to be a sailor. And so he built a bunch of different sailboats to try to sail around the world, and each one was a bigger disaster than the last, and he almost lost his life, and it was like a huge train wreck, basically. But in reading that book, I was looking at his, there was like on the back flap, his other works, and he'd written something about some roughing, I guess he had a very tragic childhood that I didn't realize, but I guess his father committed suicide, and so he had something in there, wrote, you know, or had some phrase in there that ended exploring the origins of ruin. I thought, wow, that's an intense little catchphrase there, and I started thinking of, you know, a lot of our lyrics are about human frailty and challenges that we have in human relationships, whether they be with ourselves or with others or with the outside world. And the sort of roots of this of human shortcomings is one way to look at the origins of ruin, right? So you explore themes like loneliness and regret and guilt and fear, and, you know, also you resolve them. I think our lyrics tend to have a sort of lightness at the end of the tunnel to them, so there is still hope and faith and love and, you know, preservation and stick-to-itiveness or perseverance is a better way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mixture of that sort of light and dark, but, you know, it's lyrically, I think, just all the little things that can trip us up as human beings, that's what I meant by the origins of ruin.
Mm-hmm.
And then musically, you know, the songs come from a variety of places. Sometimes they'll have a riff. Sometimes I'll have a melody, like I vividly remember I was on a golf course playing by myself, and the melody line from the Chorus of Memory just stuck in my head. I don't want the emptiness and the spotless mind would bring. And so I literally came home and I recorded that into like a little microphone so I wouldn't lose it. And then I went home later that day and I wrote the chorus around that melody line. So it can come from any variety of places.
Well, I've probably played that album. I'm not even kidding you. I've probably played that album by you guys quite a bit over the last 6 months. I really have. That is an album that really, really grabbed me by you. But anyway, moving on. You know, Nick, if you were to get in your car right now, in your iPod, what would you be listening to right now?
I have my iPod in my car, so I can tell you. Let's see. Well, I was listening to The Who earlier because we were considering doing a cover of Love, Rain, or Me. But if I exclude that, I was most recently listening to Symphony X, The Odyssey. And I was listening to an old Merciful Fate record. Very old Marcel and Melissa, so I think they're first. And I was listening to Fair to Midland, which is not metal, but I love that band. They're sort of like a Faith No More-y, eclectic, sort of angry post-alternative rock band. And I was listening to, believe it or not, Machine Head. Not Machine Head, Fear Factory Mechanized. So same difference, basically, which I generally don't go for the sort of growly vocal approach, but there's some interesting use of melody on that record, so I must have been in a bad mood. When I need catharsis, I'll go for the heavy stuff. Okay.
Well, Nick, I have a couple more questions for you. The next one would be, if you had to pick one album, say if a listener had never heard your band before, if you had to pick an album for them to start off with to basically expose them to Redemption, which album would it be and why?
I'd probably have them start out with The Origins of Ruin. Because it is, you know, Fullness is a little bit, you know, you've got like a 16-minute long song on there, and it's more, you know, I guess it's less song oriented and more, you know, sort of bigger thematic oriented. And then Snowfall is almost the other way, which is it's very, very song oriented, where you have the two long songs, but it's not sort of, you know, it doesn't feel as composed to me. You know, it's more organic with the songs. Origins, I think, is a good middle ground because you have stuff that's pretty meticulously put together, like the beginning section of Memory, where you've got, you know, different polyrhythms going on and different instruments sort of overlapping. That was pretty intentionally composed that way. But it also doesn't feel forced. So if people want something that's accessible but that also still has a good amount of technicality and the sort of progressive spirit to it, I think that's a good starting place. Plus, I think that's a pretty well-produced record. I like the way it sounds.
Well, that is an outstanding album, and I'll have to tell you, it's my favorite album, not only from the production standpoint, but from songs and just everything about it's awesome. So, you know, for my last question for you, Nick, and to all the listeners out there, any last words to say to all the fans that you do have out there in the world and, of course, here in the States? Any last words that or anything you'd like to say to them to end off the interview?
You know, we're extremely appreciative of the support and interest that we get from our fans. I'm very, very thankful that we have the opportunity to, you know, do a show like this and that you get a chance to hear some of our music. And, you know, hopefully we'll have the opportunity to come out and play for you guys soon and hope that you enjoy the next album that we've got coming up, which, with any luck, will be out, you know, sort of October timeframe. So, there you go.
All righty.